Your Honors, may it please the Court, Nicholas Moran, pro bono counsel for Petitioner Vinesh Singh. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, please. Your Honors, my client is not Tuscan. If he is deported now to Fiji, he will not have the resources to treat his incurable disease, known as valley fever, which through the fault of his own, he contracted while incarcerated in the California prison system. Now, I understand the federal government was not responsible for the harm inflicted upon Mr. Singh, which occurred while he was in custody in the state of California. However, by deporting Mr. Singh at this juncture, the federal government perpetuates that harm, and indeed violates his process.
That's just basically a legal asylum case, and we can evaluate that one way or the other, but you are claiming this was a government-created danger.
Yes, indeed.
But don't you have a dual sovereignty problem? It's not the United States that caused it. It was the state. And I don't know how you can possibly fit into this category, since it wasn't. I mean, definitely if it had been the U.S. government, then we'd have an issue. But this is just like any other danger. This is just like any other danger that can be evaluated in the normal asylum process.
Well, he's not eligible for asylum because he's not an asylum.
Well, I understand. That's his misfortune. But I don't see where this is any different.
Well, the difference is that he has had no real opportunity. Well, he actually has had an opportunity to litigate after he left prison.
But it doesn't matter. I mean, this wasn't caused by the federal government.
That's correct.
You understand me? This is not the government created. This is created by this other entity called the state.
However, I think the federal government assumes some responsibility when they deport him at this point.
So is that true for anyone who has a medical condition that they wouldn't be able to afford to treat in the place they would be deported to? What's the difference between him and anyone else who has a medical condition who might be deported?
Well, because his medical condition was inflicted by, well, it's true, it's a different jurisdiction, it's a different sovereignty, but this is the United States. And the United States is proposing to deport this man to Fiji with nothing, or he's going to die. And so the state of California, yes, the state of California caused the injury, but the fact is, by deporting him, the game's over for this man.
Well, but that's true to anybody who can't. You know, this is just a famous question. How is he different than anybody else who has been deported to a country where he can claim to have no adequate medication available?
I just find it hard to detach the situation from what the prison system did to him.
But it's not the federal prison system, it's not the United States. It is a state, it is a different sovereign, and for lots and lots and lots of reasons in our law, lots of occasions we treat states and states, the federal government, tribes, as separate sovereign entities. For example, you can be prosecuted for the same conduct, both by the federal government and the state government, without double jeopardy. There's all sorts of reasons that we're treated as different entities.
I understand, Your Honor.
I just don't see how what happened in the States is different than if he had gotten the illness by consorting with people who have the illness or by doing drugs, dirty needles and all that. He just contracted the disease somewhere.
Well, I think there's quite a substantial difference in the fact that the valley fever disease is spread amongst particularly ethnic people of Caucasians and founders like he himself, African Americans, while they were in California state prisons. Obviously, as you know, there were a number of cases.
He could have sued for that, right?
Well, he could have sued for that had he had the opportunity to sue for that.
Isn't he still suing for that?
He's suing for that, yes, and he's suing for that after he was placed in federal detention.
So if he were to obtain enough money damages in that lawsuit, could he afford the treatment in Fiji?
Indeed. But that litigation is still ongoing. So if I lose here today and Mr. Singh is deported in the next few weeks to Fiji, he'll die before he gets those damages. He's a very sick man.
humanitarian relief of any sort through the immigration remedies? I mean, it seems like a very sympathetic case. It's just a very odd form of claim that it seems like we have before us right now.
Well, I cannot disagree with that. There's an odd form of claim. It's the only claim that he can now advance.
But why can't he seek? I mean, are there humanitarian grounds that he could pursue?
Well, certainly he can petition the Attorney General for relief after this case is concluded. Yes, that is an option for him. I assume that he's going to get very far with that. But
has he tried?
Pardon me?
Has he tried?
Well, he hasn't tried because we're still in this petition for review. I think this is an option for me.
I mean, he could have tried when he filed the petition for review, and he could have sought humanitarian relief at that point.
Well,
I assume there wasn't a different Attorney General at that point.
There wasn't a different Attorney General, and I don't see anything on the record that he did try to do that. As you know, I took on this case by appointment after the record was established before the ministry.
We're not blaming you.
Are there any examples of cases in which someone who contracted valley fever in a prison had a claim for medical care after release, even if they stayed in this country under the state-created danger doctrine?
Well, those cases are all in progress.
Are they being litigated as state-created danger, or are they just being litigated as some kind of deliberate indifference, lack of medical care, or something like that? I mean, this state-created danger kind of substantive due process form of claim is not the typical kind of prison medical care kind of claim, I don't think.
Well, yes. Actually, the Jackson v. California case that's cited on the record, the claim is for unusual punishment in that one. Rather than a surprise case. I cannot cite to a case specifically where the state-created danger doctrine has been implicit in all of these valley fever cases. The Cheney, the Supreme Court case that established that the state-created danger doctrine has been cited in numerous of these cases as a grounds for damages being awarded to these prisoners without disease, and where immunity should not apply to the prison authorities.
So it might be a way to get damages, but is it a way to get, I mean, he essentially wants some form of injunctive relief, right? So, I mean, is there some kind of injunctive relief remedy out of the state-created danger doctrine that's available to prisoners who have contracted a disease in prison?
No. They are actually seeking damages for their injury. I am seeking an injunctive remedy, namely this deferral of removal until his district court litigation is completed, so that he will possibly have damages available to him to take with him to Fiji.
What is the stage of that other litigation? How long do you think it will take?
Well, I did file a motion for judicial notice, which you haven't ruled on, in which there is currently a case before the Ninth Circuit, which was argued and submitted in May. And Mr. Singh's district case has been stayed until the outcome of that case before the Ninth Circuit right now, which is apparently, I would imagine, that the decision will be coming down fairly soon since those arguments have been made.
But stayed in what stage? What stage is the district court case at? Like, if it comes back to life, will be at the motion to dismiss stage, or summary judge, or where is it?
It was at the motion to dismiss stage when it was stayed, so it will then start to proceed again if the Ninth Circuit remands it back to the district court. So it seems to me it's going to be a while before there's going to be a resolution in that district court case. Yes, I think that, and that's my concern, is that, I mean, I am fully aware of the difficulties of my argument here, but I am also very concerned about what happens to this guy. And I just think it's a little bit more complicated than anything. This is, you know, contracting a disease. It's too bad. I mean, I just think we're sovereign states, but this is the United States. The federal government, by now deporting him, as I say, I think perpetuates the harm that he incurred while he was in prison.
Has there been any attempt to mediate this case?
No, I'm sorry.
Would you
What do you think of the government's attempt to undermine your reliance on Morgan versus Gonzalez?
Well, I think Morgan Gonzalez is still valid. I mean, yes, it occurred right at the transition point of the Real ID Act, and therefore it started in district court and then was transferred to the Ninth Circuit. But now, I mean, that's the only avenue of relief that Singh has is the Ninth Circuit, and I think Morgan opens the door for substantive due process to be considered in removal proceedings. I think that decision, that opinion, still is valid. In fact, I think the analysis is the same whether you started in the district court and transferred or whether you started in the circuit court.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, Victor Lawrence on behalf of the Attorney General.
Mr. Lawrence, you think maybe the Attorney General could figure out how to generate the table of contents that actually includes the cases you're arguing in your brief?
My apologies if that didn't happen.
Well, it didn't happen with regard to Morgan. It's not listed in your table of authorities, and you discuss it in numerous places in your brief. How does that happen?
Your Honor, as you may be aware, I was not the person that prepared the brief, and I really did not know that. It's quite unusual for our office.
You obviously didn't look at your brief very carefully.
I have. Not said you missed that. Honestly, Your Honor, I don't typically look at the table of contents. I look at what's in the content of the brief.
But well, I look at both.
No, I understand, Your Honor. I
was trying to find where you're talking about Morgan.
I do apologize.
Well, that can't be your discussion of Morgan. I thought it was a pretty feeble attempt to distinguish it.
Sorry, are you going to bring it to the attention of who prepared the brief?
The author prepared the brief no longer works with us in immigration litigation. She has moved to another position with the federal government.
I see. Are you going to bring it to the attention of that person's supervisor?
I will, Your Honor. Yes.
Where was your voice now?
You want me to bring it to the attention of the drafter of the brief's supervisor? I could ask how I could do that, Your Honor. I don't know who that person is.
Why don't you talk to your solicitor about sort of whatever clauses I'm told they have in your section is not adequate?
I will ask this time, Your Honor, and I do apologize on behalf of my office.
You'll file a correct brief.
If Your Honor wishes, we will do so, yes. Yes, absolutely. Okay. So, I'm sorry, Judge Bennett, you had a question about U.S. versus Morgan versus Gonzalez.
No, it's the one sentence in Morgan. The state created danger doctrine may also be invoked to enjoin deportation.
Yes.
And I think you just say, well, that's the thing.
Yes. Well, that is what we said in the brief, Your Honor. Well, here's what I would say. The which was the original case in the Ninth Circuit, that case did invoke the state-created danger doctrine in order to enjoin removal under the specific facts in Wang. Now, if you look at footnote 16 of Wang, in my view, it makes it clear that it's based on the particular facts that the court found substantive due process right in that particular case. And I think when the Morgan court reviewed Wang, they did so by suggesting that, well, in any case, there could be a state-created danger. And I would dispute that that's really the case, and I think that's why we say it's dicta, because in Wang, it was done on the specific facts of that case. In Morgan, they suggest, yes, that back in 1996 in Wang, we did find a state-created danger doctrine. However, so this is why the government suggested that's dicta, but nevertheless, I urge the court to follow Morgan in this sense. In Morgan, the court found that there was not a colorable due process claim in the end. Here again, for the reasons the court mentioned in questioning my opposing counsel, there's not a colorable due process claim. The affirmative misconduct was not by the federal government in relation to the state-created danger doctrine. The affirmative misconduct, to the extent the arrest wasn't him, by making a judgment on that, was done by the state of California. There's no privity between the two. And in every case that's examined, the state-created danger doctrine, and I specifically point to Wang, there was significant factual analysis about how the federal government was misconduct. That is not here at all. And therefore, if the court did follow the court's opinion in Morgan, my apologies again for not being at the table of contents, but if the court did follow the opinion in Morgan and went straight to the due process issue and to see if there's really a colorable claim of substantive due process violation here, we suggest and submit that the court would not find a colorable due process claim because the federal government engaged in no affirmative misconduct.
But it's undisputed, right, that he contracted this disease while in California prison?
We are not disputing that.
So it's a pretty sympathetic situation, even if the federal government is not responsible for it. I mean, it wasn't his fault, right, that he got this disease in California prison, and it seems that he will probably die when he is deported from this country.
Well, Your Honor, I cannot submit to those facts. That is the facts that are alleged by my opponent in his briefs. Whether or not he is actually in that poor a physical condition that when he is moved to Fiji, he has the possibility of dying, I don't know whether that's true or not. But again, I don't think it matters, and I don't mean to sound non-sympathetic in this case, but just as Your Honor pointed out about what's the difference between this and a regular asylum claim where an individual is very sick and might be deported to a country, the federal government didn't cause the individual to be sick. We're not perpetuating, or I think that was the word my opposing counsel used, we're not perpetuating any harm by deporting him. We're only engaging in the federal government's fundamental sovereign attribute to be able to remove aliens who are illegally here in the United States. And the fact that he may be in that condition is not the fault of the government.
Is there humanitarian relief that he might be eligible for?
So we pointed out in our brief that under EC 4241.6, there's an avenue for him to request humanitarian relief. And frankly, in the reply brief where my opponent simply says that the prospects of relief under that are dim, was the word he used, without even trying, and there's nothing to prevent it, that prevented them from trying months ago to request humanitarian relief. And that hasn't been done, at least my opposing counsel suggests it's been done. I'm not aware of it having been done on our end either. So, yes, there is that avenue where he could request that. He hasn't done so, and therefore I think that is a moot issue.
Mr. Lawrence, did I miss something in the medical records? I didn't see anything that would indicate that if he wasn't able to take the medication, he would die. But maybe I didn't read the medical records carefully enough. Is that a reasonable inference that one could draw from this record?
From my review of the record, I was unable to draw the reference that he would die if he was removed to Fiji. Is that in response to your question, Your Honor?
It is. Thank you.
So, very simply, Your Honor, I think if the court did follow the court's opinion in Morgan and jump straight to the due process issue and found that there wasn't a colorable claim, this court could easily deny the petition for review. And, you know, we also argue that the state-created danger doctrine is not available in this circuit, which is a tougher argument, I concede. But we do so based on the phrasing in Wang, which suggests that it was only under those particular facts in that particular case. And again, in Oregon, what we believe to be dicta, just indicating that in Wang, the state-created danger doctrine was accepted in the previous case. So I think the better reason for you might be to follow the courts in the First and Third Circuit, which found that there's no jurisdiction, no substantive due process for this particular claim.
Well, in those cases, the court went off on a separation of powers arguments, and that's noticeably absent from both Wang and Morgan, as I recall.
Right, and
why is that, do you think?
Why did the Ninth Circuit not choose to?
I guess it wasn't raised, probably.
Possibly not, I can't be for certain, but, you know, when Wang also, there's another critical distinction in that. In Wang, the government had not yet implemented the Convention Against Torture, which is available now, and of course, my opponent has waived the claim under the Convention Against Torture as well as the denial of asylum and withholding. But in Wang, the Convention Against Torture was not in place yet, and this wasn't implemented through that time, that petitioner who really did have the possibility of being tortured upon his removal to China could not rely on a claim of protection under the Convention Against Torture. However, Mr. Singh was not in that position. I think that's another critical distinction between what's happening in this case and what happened before in Wang.
That wasn't true by the time Morgan was decided, though, right?
By the time Morgan was decided, the Convention Against Torture was available, but in Morgan, again, you assume that the state-created danger doctrine was available, jump straight to the due process issue, and analyze whether there was a culpable claim. There was an issue of whether or not.
But if Kat had overruled Wang, then Morgan wouldn't have made that assumption, right? I mean, it was so obvious that the Kat statute superseded Wang.
Well, I respectfully take issue with the words that the Kat superseded Wang. I'm just saying that alternative method of protection claim under the Convention Against Torture was not available at the time of Wang.
Right, but so Wang exists, and we're bound by the existence of Wang unless something superseded it or got rid of it. I mean, we don't have an en banc decision getting rid of it, so it seems like the only thing that can get rid of it is the Kat statute, and that seems not to have been Morgan's assumption.
Okay, or the market rely on 16 of Wang and read that to mean that this decreated danger doctrine and subsequent due process rights for aliens was available in that particular case, given the fact that the government forced Mr. Wang to come to the country and testify.
Right, but so then you can argue on the merits that this is a dose of regions or something, but that doesn't mean it's not available in theory on some sets of facts.
So I concede, Your Honor, that it's a tough argument to say that it's not available at all. It's our preference that the court look at the First Circuit's opinion in Wanwu and the Third Circuit's in Kamara and conclude that it's not available.
But we would have to go on bonds to do that, I think.
Okay, so in that case, I think that the better course of action, perhaps, is to go straight to the due process claim, realize that there's not a culpable due process claim here, that the affirmative misconduct was by, if anybody, by the state of California, not by the federal government. We're doing nothing to perpetuate that harm, and therefore, it really doesn't matter whether we're perpetuating it or not, because we weren't involved in the egregious misconduct. The egregious misconduct, in the first place, of course, is the claim of deliberate indifference within the California prison system for allowing individuals to contract valley fever. The federal government had nothing to do with that. As a result, this individual, unfortunately, cannot rely on the state-created danger doctrine to the extent that it exists in the circuit.
Do you think there would be any value in mediating this case?
I really don't, Your Honor. Of course, if it was the court's opinion to or request for us to engage in mediation, of course, we would honor that. But I don't see that there's an in-between line here. These cases are looked at for prosecutorial discretion, but this is a case that the government determined this individual was an aggravated felon. He attempted to kill somebody. Of course, he was convicted of corporal injury to his living girlfriend. And, as an aggravated felon, he was a lawful permanent resident, but now that as a result of being an aggravated felon, he's removable from the United States, and that's what the government seeks to do.
Mr. Lawrence, can you enlighten me on some other contexts in which a separation of powers argument precludes the court from reaching a due process issue?
Well, wasn't that the case in Oahu as well as Camaro?
Yeah, I'm talking about other contexts.
Okay, other contexts in which.
Outside of immigration, where courts are precluded from reaching a due process issue because of alleged separation of powers issues.
Offhand, Your Honor, I can't come up with any examples. I suggest that immigration, is ingrained in our Constitution as a fundamental sovereign attribute to be able to remove aliens. And in this context, given the reasoning provided, for example, by the First and Third Circuits, as well as the Tenth Circuit, that this court would well be within its power to rule that. But I also understand that the Wang decision is available should you determine that there is a state-created danger possibility where that could be brought in the Ninth Circuit. Again, go straight to the due process issue. There's no colorable due process claim here. And
argument being that he's in the midst right now of a due process before the district court, which has not yet been completed, and that it will be short-circuited, his rights will be short-circuited if he is deported now. The question of whether he will die in Fiji, the man is very sick on the record. He already developed a lung tumor. He was already on a breathing machine. His testimony in the immigration court about his condition was pretty compelling as far as I'm concerned, that he needed this fungal, antifungal medication on a pretty constant basis, and the fact that they took him off that medication, his condition reverted back to the severity that it had had before. He has to be tested right now at the West County Detention Center. He is being tested periodically for what, for the level of the fungal content in his blood, and that is how they regulate how much of this fluoconazole he should have. Fiji does not have any of these resources. They don't even have fluoconazole, apparently, according to that's on the record. It costs $10 a day, and not granted. Now we're getting into circumstances that really have nothing to do with the due process. It's more humanitarian aspect. And yes, I would